Hey, what's up? Hello, future casters. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Past, Present, Future Cast, the podcast that's also a tarot card reading. First things first, I just need everyone listening to be aware that this past week, Israel murdered an entire team of Al Jazeera journalists who have been reporting on the genocide in Palestine. Israel also announced their official plan to fully occupy Palestine. This announcement, plus the murder of some of the last remaining people who can tell the world about the atrocities being committed, is a terrifying sign of what is to come for the Palestinian people and land. Don't look away. It's not too late to speak up. We know that capitalist greed is part of what is fueling this cruelty, so please divest where you can and keep screaming for justice. Now, let's get into a listener question. On my Instagram stories recently, I mentioned how I'm in the goo phase. And a listener of the pod requested that I talk a little bit more about what that means. Now, I'll say I did not come up with this term. I see it thrown around a bit in the wooey and crunchy spheres that I'm in. The goo phase, and when I'm saying this, it's goo, like G-O-O, goo. Gooey, gooey, goo. The goo phase is actually a reference to the process butterflies go through when they transform from caterpillar to butterfly in their chrysalis. There's surely a much more scientific way to describe this, but I am not a scientist, so please keep that in mind. But my understanding of the process is that their little caterpillar bodies turn to goo before reforming into the structure of a butterfly. So on a metaphoric level, to be in the goo phase is to be in a liminal space. And shout out to former, past, present, future cast guest, Marcella Kroll, author of the book Healing the Liminal. If you want a deeper understanding of what it means to be a liminal person, I highly recommend that book. But to summarize, and for our purposes here, a liminal space is somewhere in between, and a liminal person is someone who exists primarily in that in-between space. So you're no longer a caterpillar, but you're still not a butterfly. And as Brittany said, you're not a girl. You're not yet a woman. These are examples of the liminal. So I'm in a goo phase right now. There's a lot happening in my career at the moment, but it's not like actually happening yet. Like I'm preparing and I'm training and developing and certainly changing, but I'm not yet fully in the experience of what I'm preparing for. Goo phase can feel like a big breakdown. Personally, I'm in a tower month, as indicated by the cards I pulled for myself for each month of the year back at the beginning of 2025. Experientially, it feels like a lot of pressure. It feels like a lot of things that were going just fine are not going well anymore. It feels like doors that were previously open now being more closed, or spaces that I felt comfortable in no longer feeling quite right. Another way that I conceptualize these kinds of cycles that we all move through to varying degrees and at varying times in our lives is the metaphor of literal childbirth. Using literal childbirth as a metaphor. So keeping in mind when we're talking about this as a metaphor that you are both the one giving birth and that which is being birthed all at the same time. So this part of the process is when we're in the birth canal, we're feeling that pressure, we're knowing things are moving and changing and shifting. And we're also not knowing what the actual fuck is on the other side. So goo phase can be really scary. It's scary to feel everything break down with no idea of what is coming on the other side. This is the phase where in the past I've tended to like freak out and feel the urge to just drop everything and run away. And that's on avoidant attachment. See if I can outrun the process, outrun the discomfort. But as I've learned through my work with tarot over the years, this isn't necessarily the best strategy, right? Especially if you're someone who, one, finds themselves evolving a lot, like I do, thanks to my very prominent Uranus placement. Or two, if you're someone who wants to learn from these cycles, you want to grow in your wisdom, and you want to find healing, not just for yourself, but for generations before and after you. If that's your path, I advise that you get real comfortable with goo phase. A phrase I learned from tarot teacher Lindsay Mack is finding ease. How can you find ease in each transition and evolution? This is the core of many of my tarot client consultations. Like, okay, there's a major change happening around you. How can you find ease through this process? This question will really come in handy this fall as we enter into another eclipse season, a time where we are much more likely to experience major endings and major beginnings. How can you find ease through it all? So that's my little spiel on goo phase. I'm in it right now. Are you in it right now too? If so, I'm sending you lots of love from my chrysalis to yours. May you receive exactly what you need on the other side. And if you'd benefit from a little cosmic guidance, know that I'm currently booking virtual tarot and astrology readings on my website, persephonictarot.com. That's persephonictarot.com. Now let's get into our next interview. All right, I am here with Jonah Coyote Ivy. Jonah is the founder of Transforming Terrain, a land stewardship contracting group here in Tucson, Arizona. They specialize in arboriculture, water harvesting installations, irrigation, erosion control, and native plant relations. And Jonah teaches free community workshops on all of these topics. So a really incredible land steward here in Tucson. I'm so excited to get to talk to you, Jonah. We've tried to do this interview multiple times. All in good time. We're here today. How's it going?
Good. It's good timing with the monsoons and the clouds.
So. Yes, it's getting a little cloudy outside today. Maybe we'll get some rain. And you just had a birthday.
I did. Yeah, just 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
So there's something special about birthdays and the tarot that I wanted to kind of throw into this interview since I saw that that happened. So 2 days ago, your birthday was on the 9th then of July?
Or the 8th. Yeah, it was 3 days ago.
The 8th.
Yeah.
July 8th. Okay. We're exactly 3 months apart. I'm the 8th of October.
Oh, nice.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add up the digits of the month, the day, and then this current year, 2025, to find what your tarot major arcana card of the year is. So this is a card that kind of like describes the general like lessons and like archetypal experiences that you might encounter throughout this year of life until your next birthday.
All right.
So I'm going to add 7 plus 8 because July 8th plus 2 plus 2 plus 5 for 2025, ignoring the 0. And that brings me 24. So I'm going to add those digits again because we need it to be a number that's 22 or under. And 2 plus 4 is 6. So you are entering into a lover's card year.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to pull out a lover's card, and we'll just like keep that in mind as we go through this. So the lovers as the major arcana, it sounds like we're talking about relationships and romantic relationships and like love relationships, which yes, it of course describes those, but the lovers as an archetype, it is really all about like the people that we keep around us and how that reflects who we are and how we reflect who they are. It's how like we're mirrors to each other all the time. And it also has to do with like the choices that we make, specifically the choices of like who we keep around us, like the choice of relationships that we establish. Pulling out the lovers and just keeping that in mind as we go through this reading. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
So the first thing I'd love to talk about is just what is transforming terrain? What do y'all do?
Yeah, I like to use the word land stewardship because I really think what's different about the way we're going about it is we look at all the aspects of the landscape and we work with all of those different aspects. So, you know, I don't like irrigation personally, but we do that because sometimes that's a need. But we work with the trees. We all study arboriculture culture, and, you know, some of us are almost certified arborist. We do rock work and erosion control. So we know how to identify all the plants. And the reason we talk about native food a lot and how to grow food and recharge groundwaters and groundwater tables. And that's the reason we look at it from the holistic way is because it's really a culture and a relationship thing. And we're contractors because we need to make business in this capitalist, you know, setup that we're in. But doing this as a cultural thing. And I think that everybody is a land steward and should be one, and have a knowledge of all the plants and soils and waters around them, because it's the baseline of a sustainable community.
Yeah. And we'll definitely talk about like where you have drawn learning from indigenous cultures and how you've learned from the people who were here before us. But for those who are not familiar, I know when the first time we tried to start this interview, I got tripped up on the word arboriculture because I hadn't necessarily seen it or read it out loud before. So I imagine others are unfamiliar with that word as well. What does that mean? How does that impact or influence what y'all are doing as a contracting group?
Yeah, I think the term comes from like arbor, which is tree, and doing tree care. But the actual trade or practice is deeper than that. So you're looking at soil health. You're focused on all the plants, not just trees, and figuring out how to make sure all these plants and soil biomes are healthy working together. But a big part of it, and what everyone immediately thinks of, is pruning and cutting trees, climbing trees with ropes and helmets, doing all this kind of stuff. That's definitely a big part of it. But the knowledge runs a lot deeper, even on like a biological level, understanding how trees function, just like a doctor would for humans. So yeah, we do that. And we love that.
Some tree diagnostics. I love meeting like tree people and water harvesting type people, like folks who have interest in that, partially because I was introduced to it pretty young because my stepfather is a certified arborist and he like did a lot of rainwater harvesting projects while he worked for the city of Tucson, like in the landscaping department.
Cool.
So it's cool. It's like one of my little like fun facts that I tell people. I'm like, oh yeah, my step, like he's retired now, but my stepdad like designed a lot of the landscape in the medians around town.
Oh wow, that's really cool. That's what we're getting ready to work on as a team, all the stormwater stuff.
So cool. So what, like, there's so many things I want to ask. I mean, one of my questions is, like, what have you learned from trees? Like, that's such a vague question, but I feel like you'll understand what I'm asking. Like, what do trees have to teach us or teach you as you're going out on these jobs and like determining the best practices for stewarding each bit of land?
Yeah. Well, trees definitely are good. You know, I think of trees as relatives and people. You know, I don't think of them as a thing. I think of them as like a someone. And they're really good people to learn from about relationships. They have relationships with everything around them, and they tend to be healthy. So I just learn a lot from them about that. But also just realizing that we have a food system that could sustain a large population right in front of us, and the barriers that we're not using it, and that we don't have a relationship with the land, at least like not as much as we should or used to. So that's what I've kind of learned, is those two things are like some of the biggest things I've learned. Yeah. Or learning, always learning from.
Always yeah. learning. What you mentioned food systems a couple of times. What plants, trees do you think we should be relying on more as people living in the desert?
Yeah, I mean, whatever kind of fills your cup. You know, if I have a kidney disease, then I might use kidney wood. You use the bark of the kidney wood, which is a small legume tree here. And it has a lot of remedies for that. Whereas if you're a diabetic, you might try mesquite flour, because mesquite flour is sugary, but it doesn't spike your diabetic, you know, issues. Yeah, I just think that's better, a better way of going about something, because really every single tree and plant is medicinal or edible or could be used in building things. So they're all kind of important in having a relationship with the land. You know, everyone would think I'd say like mesquite because there's so much of it, but what sticks isn't doing what sticks is usually just what is relatable, like what you're looking for.
Are there any particular plants that you are most connected to right now that you feel like are providing you some particular medicine at this time?
Well, it does just happen to be the mesquite harvesting season. And I do love mesquites, because you can eat the sap. You know, you can use their roots and leaves medicinally. So they're just kind of a all-around, like, great plant. But I think maybe creosote, shuggy, is what they call that plant in autumn. And it just, similar to mesquite, kind of you can use all the parts of the plant, and they have so many medicinal properties to them. And that's kind of, I'm getting away from our healthcare system. I don't even know if it's going to be around in 20 years. And this is a plant that, you know, you could use it for a cough, for a cut, for, you know, damage to your organs, sunburn. It just has so many uses. So I've been using that year round, and that's nice to have a plant you can use all year.
Definitely one of my favorites as well, for a good chunk of time over the last 5 years. I've had various phases of making infused oils to use like topically, not necessarily medicinally, but just as a fun, supportive, like herb and gemstone infused elixir. I have like one that I've made right here with me that I was putting on my hands before I worked with a client earlier today, because I was doing a client reading before this.
Oh, cool.
And creosote is one of the main things that I would infuse into the oils. I would do a creosote and calendula blend.
Yeah.
And it just, like, the scent infuses into the oil. It's such a lovely, like, I love it. I also just had a massage at one of the places that I work, and they used a creosote oil on me for the full body massage. And then it like rained later on that day, but I just smelled like creosote all day long. I guess we should maybe even explain what this plant is, if anyone's listening who's like not from Tucson. And I've even encountered people who have lived in Tucson for a while who are not familiar, but creosote, also known as chaparral, and again, known by the indigenous people of this region, the Thana Otham, as shugi. How would you describe this bush, I guess?
Yeah, well, it's a bush that has a huge range, or a plant that has a huge range of like where they naturally grow, you know, from Texas to California, down in Mexico. And so it's an arid plant, and they get these little small waxy leaves and little yellow flowers with white seed balls. And important, they recommend you don't harvest the plant where the seeds and flowers are. So if you're going to go harvesting, usually there's ones without flowers during the flowering season. Those are the ones I harvest from then. Yeah, just it's a cool plant because I've seen them get 15 feet tall. So they're just another one of those plants that'll kind of grow to their microenvironment. But a lot of times people don't see them get bigger than maybe 4 feet to 5 feet in like a half dome, kind of leggy looking. Yeah, I love them. They're great.
Very leggy.
They smell. Yeah, you know, the thing is they smell good when you know it's raining. Yeah.
That's like the most important, or not the most important, but that's my like favorite characteristic about this plant is when they get damp or wet or moist, or if it's just extra humid, or if you blow your breath on them, mm-hmm. like a little, and like get them a little moist with your breath. The, what's the word I'm thinking of? Not like sap or oils, but the, I guess sap would be a word, but the sticky stuff that's on the leaves, yeah. It releases this scent, and it's what we, in the whole desert range where this plant grows, it's what we associate with the smell of rain, because when it rains, the plant gets wet, and then they all release this incredible smell. I have encountered people who don't like it, but, you know, it's okay to have bad opinions sometimes.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste.
Some people are wrong.
It smells better when you relate it to home.
yeah. When it's home and it means it's been raining, and rain is like such a life-giving source here in the desert. My other favorite like fun fact about creosote, because when I was using it in the products, like I was selling them and I wanted to do a lot of research about the plant and know what I was doing and like make sure I wasn't like harming people. I came across the fact that one of the oldest living organisms on Earth is a creosote bush that's just like kind of continuously like regenerated and like pupped off of itself in this like circle in the Mojave Desert. And now I can't remember what it's called, but it has a really fun name. I'm Googling it. King clone, because it like kind of like clones itself is one of the ways that it like grows, and it'll form like kind of a big ring. And this is like the most badass like fairy ring in the world. It's this big ring of creosote bush that is estimated to be 11,700 years old, almost 12,000 years old.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. The plants hold so much knowledge.
Wild.
They really do.
So much. Like that plant and like its DNA, like itself has lived through and witnessed almost 12,000 years of history. It's a wise ass plant. It's got so much to teach us.
Yeah. Sometimes I laugh a little bit because I feel like we're rushing to find solutions, even myself included, like with my business.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that we're just moving too fast. And it's almost like that we had a bunch of labs, you know, for 10,000 years and research going in. And now we're just discounting all of it. And we're doing all this research to find out things that are already happening that people and plants already know. You know, the plants have all this wisdom we're trying to get through like academia and research and this and that and pharma and yada yada. And it's like We really have all the answers there. That's what I've learned from the plants and trees, is that all the answers and solutions are already here and we're just not listening. It's not that we need to find anything. We just need to slow down and listen to what's already been done.
You've really aptly described a card that's come up here for your present, your current work. This card is called the Hanged One. Traditionally called the Hanged Man, most modern decks that I work with now refer to it as the Hanged One. And essentially, it's about receiving wisdom and knowledge, that slow way from listening and observing and tapping into really nature. And it's depicted as someone doing this by hanging themselves upside down from a tree. It's invoking the myth of Odin, who hung himself upside down from the tree of life in order to receive the wisdom of the runes. So here in this image, we have an opossum hanging upside down from this glorious tree next to a river. And they have like a crown of lightning bugs around their head. It's very biblical. It's very beautiful. But I can't think of a more like apt card to come up when we're talking about the wisdom of trees, what we have to learn from plants, and this slow, much more traditional way of gathering knowledge and of remembering what maybe has been lost as we, as like a society, have cut ourselves off from nature and what we have to learn from our environment around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm also in this like big phase, kind of similar to the lover card you pulled earlier. I have just been starting to build the team. So it's not like just me or me and Quail, the other person who's been on the team for a long time. I had a lot of my family helping me. We still do stuff together and they help me, but I had to kind of set some boundaries. And I've also brought in a lot of people who aren't from the family, and just learning a lot from them. And we're kind of trying to grow this team and work into something that's kind of culture challenging, you know, doing things a different way, similar to how we're talking right now, slower. You know, we listen to everybody on the team and everybody in the community, and we pull from those. That's where we like make decisions from, not from our own logic and experience. And we always go into every situation anew, if that makes sense, like being open to being wrong or being learning something new or going about it a new way. So yeah, that card's definitely fitting for the season, for sure. Trying to humble myself and stay humble as a team, you know, to the plants, yeah, to the world, to the people around us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's also like a bit of a sense here of like, on the other hand, yes, you know, staying humble, being open to new ideas and new experiences and listening to everyone around you. But there's also, there's what you're doing is, like you mentioned, somewhat like against the culture and against like the standard operating procedure, like the way of doing things. So there is this need for you and everyone on your team, but you as like the steward of that team and like the guiding and inspiring force to like assert yourself and your intentions. And it's what you're asserting is us returning to a humbleness and a way of more like honoring all beings around us, not just the humans and like what we need to survive. But there is a bit of like needing to like assert that that's important, right? Like, because if you didn't, it's just steamrolling over and doing it the old way. So that's where I'm seeing this other card that's come up. It's titled Inspiration. It's the Ace of feathers, which in this deck corresponds to wands, so the Ace of Fire. And fire is very much about like our soul, our passion, our drive, our purpose, like what keeps us moving forward. And the image here has almost like a showdown between two different birds. There's like a great horned owl here and this strike of lightning, which gives this like
divide.
Intensity.
Yeah,
it's a divide, right? So the lightning strike is dividing the owl from this other bird, which I think it's some kind of like hawk or some other bird of prey that's not an owl. I can't quite tell. But
yeah,
there's like a little bit of a tension there. But that word inspiration, like everything you're doing feels so inspiring. And you have to take this role of inspiring your clients and your potential clients and your team members to like see the vision, to get on board with the vision of the Hanged One. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I feel like it's not going to happen though through like preaching about it. It's really about like we do workshops a lot. And what I'll say in the workshops and to the team and everyone is that I'm not there as an instructor. I'm there as a facilitator. And all of us are teachers and we're teaching each other. And, you know, we're at different points within that journey, but that's what gives us different perspectives that everybody needs. So a lot of times what leaves people inspired is when they're teaching themselves, you know, or when they're learning from their friends and we're doing the work rather than talking about it. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's a need to convince people, but the truth is that, stewarding the land is like, it runs deep on so many levels. It's the food and medicine of the next generation. It's recharging groundwater. It's keeping endangered species alive. It's giving us shade so we can walk in the desert. It does all these things. And, when you steward the land, you're doing all the things. And so when you talk about it, you could just talk forever, but when you build it, you don't need to say anything because like you're setting up those systems and people will come home to the land when they're ready. You know, you're not going to get them ready by saying something or like maybe even by doing something, but if you create it rather than just speak it, then it'll be there when people are ready to come home. So yeah, I feel like the inspiring part isn't like, that's what's happening, but it's not what we're doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like, it's an effect. It's an after effect of like what you're doing.
Yeah, it is inspiring though. Everybody's really pretty inspired.
Hey, guess what? This is an ad. No, I don't have any paid sponsors for the podcast yet. Manifesting that in 2026, please. But I did just get my very own affiliate link for a product that I do genuinely love and am so happy to tell you about. If you know me, you know that I love a good bevy. And I really love a good bevy made locally with desert-inspired botanicals and bonus points if it also gives back to my beloved Sonoran Desert region. Well, Parch does all of this. Parch mocktails are desert-inspired, non-alcoholic agave spirits made with botanicals and adaptogens, conscientiously crafted in harmony with the Sonoran Desert. My favorite flavor is the spiced piñarita. It's not too sweet and has this lovely smoky flavor that reminds me of a good quality mezcal. The best part is that Parch donates 1% of profits to the Mission Garden right here in Tucson, helping to support their mission of maintaining the biodiversity of the Sonoran Desert. If you are looking for something new to sip as we survive this hot, hot summer, try out Parch. If you use my affiliate link, which is located here in the show notes, I get a little kickback, which is super cool and appreciated. Thank you to Parch for welcoming me to the affiliate team, and thank you for listening. Now, let's get back to the show. So So what do some of these workshops kind of look like when you say you're facilitating and you're kind of letting people like learn and teach themselves? What might a workshop kind of entail? How or what are some topics that you've facilitated in the past?
Yeah, well, we do classes and workshops. And when it's a class format, I still frame it a lot similar as me as a facilitator, but I come in with a little bit more of a lesson plan so people can walk away with technical deliverables. Like I wanted to learn about these plants, how to identify them. So we'll achieve that, but then we still have open discussion. But those are usually only like 1 to 3 hours. Our workshops tend to be all day, like 8 hours, 10 hours. And what really puts them, I think maybe the most important part is that there's good quality food for everybody, and it's all free. So all of our classes and workshops are free. If they're like usually paid, like we're doing it for the city. Sometimes we'll teach for municipalities or nonprofits, like the city of Chandler and stuff. And I'll like tell them it has to be free. Like I'm not going to teach it unless it's free. So just, I won't, whatever it takes to make it free. And then the free food, that's high quality home cooked food, for the workshops. Usually whoever we're doing the workshop for has to provide all the food. So something that I learned from this group in Phoenix called Tiger Mountain Foundation, what they did is, there were these vacant lots, and kids were getting, there was vacant lots everywhere all over South Phoenix, and these kids were getting arrested on these lots for trespassing, and it was kind of putting them into that prison industrial complex to profit off their enslavement. And so what this guy did is he started making these gardens on these vacant lots and making them spaces where people could just go to have a safe space and also get mentorship, from people that know those parts of town but are living balanced lives. And I just saw that the goal wasn't to grow food. The goal was just to have the provide what the community needed right then. And but then a bunch of food got grown, and so I got inspired. That was a big learning lesson for me. So our workshops, a lot of times we're teaching people how to build rainwater harvesting systems, how to approach arboriculture, how to identify these plants. And we're a lot of times we're building real systems. And most of the time, I don't even go to the site beforehand. I show up with a fresh set of eyes with the volunteers, and we make the design together and we build it as a community. And everybody's eating, there's music. What we're coming in with is just all the tools. So the goal isn't to harvest the rainwater or prune trees correctly. The goal is to build community around a culture, centered in the land. And that's why people come. They don't come to learn about water harvesting. They do learn about water harvesting, and that might be why they thought they came. But by the time they leave, everybody realizes that this is just a really good and important tool to building a unified, strong community.
That's awesome. That's really incredible. I think that's really, really important work to be doing. And yeah, building that community, and then the rainwater also gets harvested.
Yeah,
The trees also get pruned,
right. We love all of
in
those.
addition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So it's you have from hearing you speak, from meeting with you a couple times, like I hear so much of like a really like unified, or maybe unified's not the right word, but like a holistic worldview that all aspects of food and work and friendship and labor, like all of these things are kind of under this umbrella of moving through the world as like a good steward and a good relative and a good just person walking this earth. And I'm curious, like, how that developed in you. What were some of your early influences that kind of shaped how you see the world now and how you bring that perspective into your daily life and your work with Transforming Terrain?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Where'd you learn this stuff,
Jonah? Where'd you learn this stuff? From everybody in the trees. I think...
Were you always like this? Maybe is a good place to start. Like, have you always had a relationship with the trees?
I've always been like this. Like, my family would say that I've always been pretty much wanting to include everybody, loving and talking to the plants, like wandering off into the trees and gardens alone and talking. Like, so I kind of have always been like this for sure. But yeah, I mean, they've taught me, the plants, that we're better together. You know, you don't see plants like out here thriving when they're all alone. They're even invasive plants, you know, and I don't even use that term. I don't really believe in that term, but just for the clip, you know, for the point of the conversation, even when an invasive species takes over a land and it becomes like a mono field of just one species, then they start to suffer, you know, and die back. So no one does good alone. Nothing in this world is meant to function siloed. It's all supposed to be interconnected and working together. So it's pretty an obvious lesson. And it's also obvious that that's not how our culture and society functions. So,
have you ever felt alone or like an outsider in holding this perspective when others might not?
Not really, especially because it's not a new idea. You know, Indigenous people have been saying the same thing since as long as I've been listening to that wisdom. And, you know, it's that everything in this universe is connected to us, and we're not more important, but we're also not less important. You know, and yeah, so I've never really, I tend to gravitate towards spaces of justice, injustice, you know, like with Indigenous groups or, you know, Black communities and, you know, marginalized communities, the LGBTQ scene, because it tends to be that those are the spaces where people are awake and aware of our disconnection and like the flaws of this world. And so, yeah, I'm really not saying anything new. I'm really just listening to everybody and everything around me that's taught me how to love. Yeah.
Because that's the root of it all at the end of the day, right? It's just all about love.
Yeah, I'd say so, at least for me.
Yeah, that's what I like to say too. So growing up, okay, you're a young person wandering off to talk to the trees and the plants. You're a teenager starting to figure out like who you are in the world. We both went to ASU around the same time. We discovered this like random conversation that we probably were friends, or at least friends of friends. Like, our friends definitely knew each other.
Right. Hilarious.
So really funny. And I've like blocked out all of college because I had a bad time. I just didn't like being there. I was like not in a good mental state. So I like can't remember a lot of it, but I'm sure if I could, we had to have been at the same party once or twice.
Right.
So thinking about that past, like, what groups did you connect with? Like, what folks did you start learning from and to inform where you're at now?
Yeah. Well, my dad always said, leave a place better than you found it. And my mom always, you know, really encouraged us to love everyone without judgment, including ourselves. And that as long as we're listening to our intuition, we'll end up where we need to be. So I've been in a lot of different spaces and I've never really felt out of place or like I'm doing the wrong thing. If that makes sense. Like throughout high school, I was in pretty much anything I could do, like athletics, arts, you know, chess club, like whatever.
Just all over the map.
Yeah, and when I went to college, I only put one application in, it was to ASU. And I was like, if I'm not going for free, I'm not going, 'cause I don't feel like they're teaching what we need to teach. So I was kind of already in that mentality by the time I was going to college out of straight from high school. And that was probably 'cause my parents just let me be so free, and so naturally I came across truth, the truth of the world, both the beauty and sorrows. So yeah, but they let me in. I got a full ride. So, and then my mom was a professor, so I had that privilege to get a discount. But because I didn't have that stress of paying for it, and my parents didn't have any expectations, I didn't actually declare a degree till my last year of college. And I took classes in every subject you could imagine: economics, anatomy, horticulture, just everything. That's why I went, was to learn. And I really dove deep into the realm of economics and politics and philosophy, and just started to realize that the base of a culture and the base of a society is the food system, and then once you have those basic necessities, then you think about government. How are we going to govern ourselves? And so then that made me realize why they committed genocide on the indigenous, because they had their own food system. Why they're still committing genocide on all the indigenous people of this world, it's because they have their own food system, their own belief system that keeps them strong spiritually. They didn't need capitalism. And that was the biggest threat to capitalism and to a slave-driven republic, was a different opposing ideology that worked. So just, so I, throughout college, I just got more and more into social justice, because I felt like there are these greedy people in this world kind of holding back the rest of the world from just enjoying themselves, because we really don't need much. And most people don't have much. And so I was in a lot of like activism spaces in college, and then also a lot of food system stuff, like the garden club, and I started a couple clubs, a food pantry and stuff. Or like worked with clubs. So those are the spaces I was in, and kind of how I got to this point was of, wanting to be a steward, and wanting to be revolutionary in that way rather than in other ways.
I like what you said about, first we need a food system. Like we have the food system, and then society, like the rest of society, can kind of like grow up around it. And that is really reflected in the major arcana of the tarot and the order that cards are in. So a lot of my worldview and understanding of like the nature of the universe has been shaped by studying the archetypes of the tarot, specifically the major arcana. Like my worldview, or like my spiritual understanding, kind of holds the belief that these 22 cards in the major arcana like give us all the all everything that we need to know, like really could be found in there, just in the same way as it can also be found in the cycles of the seasons and in so many other, places that we can seek this information. But in tarot, we have first we have the Empress, which is number three. Like, so there's the Fool, and then there's the Magician, and then there's the High Priestess, and that's just like establishing like matter and consciousness. And then we have the Empress, and the Empress is that creative force. It's what, like, it's the force that allows fruit to grow and plants to grow and like water to flow and soil to exist. Like, it is nature, capital N. And after the Empress is number three. Number four is the Emperor. And the Emperor is the card that relates to like structure and society and like the homes within and like the walls, the boundaries of the city or the town, and then the roads that connect it. It's all those other things that grow up outside and after that first like necessary essence of nature. So I'm hearing you speak about, you know, how you understand the world, and I'm seeing that reflected back in this tool that I use to understand the world. So it's fun to draw those connections there.
Yeah.
The cards that have come up for your past are very interesting to me because they're these like big, like I call them like the heavy hitters sometimes, like these like big major cards that come up in the major arcana. And to me, it's like indicating this sense, it's just reflecting exactly what you've said of you learning as much as you can about how the world works, both on a like ecological level and on like the level of what people are doing and like how the governing bodies have set up the rules of the world. And there's so much about how the world works on a systemic and structural level that is like deeply fucked up, that we as people, like, you know, we become woke when we realize that, right? When we wake up and understand that the world is like deeply fucked because we've moved so far away from, you know, the literally like the laws of nature and like how right relationship with the planet and each other could look. And I think that's what this card is indicating. Like, it's crazy. Like, the tower is what has come up. And anyone who works with the tarot, it's a whole chaotic mess in this card. But anyone who works with the tarot knows that the tower is like, ooh, big, like, fucked up thing happens. Or, like, major event, like, boom, we have, you know, another flash of lightning. This flash of lightning comes down. I'm holding the card upside down because it came up reversed. But this flash of lightning comes down. It like sparks a wildfire fire, like shit. Suddenly everything's changing, like everything's falling apart. And I think how this card is coming up reversed is indicating that like it's not necessarily that that happened in your life. Like maybe there's a part of the story that we're missing of like some crazy illness or injury or accident or like major thing happened for you. But I think a lot of it is just that there was like this innate sense of understanding.
It's all crashing.
That's all crashing. That the whole system, the whole world, were in our tower moment, and that you were born in a period of time. You were growing up in a period of time. You're going to live your life in a period of time where we're in one of those massive systemic tower moments. Mm-hmm. You know, coming from an astrological perspective, astrologers right now keep being like, this certain alignment never fucking happens. The only time it's ever happened is when like this major world catastrophe happened. This major world catastrophe happened. Like there's all these things happening right now where we're in, you know, it's become an overused phrase, but it's unprecedented fucking times. Like it truly is. We're still in unprecedented times. This is a very important time for life on Earth and for humans and like our development as a species. Are we gonna figure it out or are we not? And so for you, it just seems like there's been an understanding of that. You've been able to see and find the wisdoms and the teachings. Again, this is not new information. As you've said, indigenous cultures have talked about periods of time like this. You know, there's many different ways and layers to look at the fact that we're in kind of a crazy time in the world and have been, not just talking about like since 2020 or in this like handful of years, but like these couple generations.
Yes.
So the tower reflecting the fact that, you know, you could see that flash. When we talk about the tower, a lot of times it's that lightning strike that is a moment of illumination where we understand, we can see everything clearly, we know what's fucked, what's not, and now we have to move forward with that information. And it's being paired also with judgment, which is another, like, it's the second to last card in the major arcana, and it really represents like hearing the call from spirit, hearing the call from like whatever you consider your higher power to be, the universe, whatever, understanding that there is a call and that you're being invited to respond to it and to do the work, like you've said, to not just talk about it, but to actually like make the choices to try to make a difference moving forward. How does that sit with you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel a calling. That doesn't mean that it makes me more special than anyone else. I think everyone has a calling, but since I was young, I felt a strong calling, like since before college to...
Not everyone listens to their calling is the thing. Like everyone has a calling. Exactly like you said, it doesn't make you special or not. The thing that does, I think, make people special, and everyone could be special if they wanted to, is actually listening to it. Listening to it and, like, responding, following that path.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like you've done a lot to do that by creating a whole business around it.
Yeah, I mean, every step of my life has been guided by intuition. And, like, even when things go wrong, I still think that it was the right choice as long as I listened. I've had a lot of privilege. You know, I've had a lot of security in my life, so it's easier to make risk or to listen to that intuition because I know that even if it's subconsciously, I know that somewhere I have stability to fall onto. So there is that, you know, that's something that's an important aspect too. But yeah, I've always listened to my intuition and I've always had a calling. So that's why I felt like I could go to college and not get a degree. You know, and it'd be worth it or not go to college, but I was kind of just listening to intuition. So yeah, that lines up for sure. These are the times for sure. You're going to be, your true character is going to be exposed very soon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. So thinking about the future, thinking about what's to come, you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier how you're wanting to grow and like keep providing the work that you're providing, but also maybe expanding it in some ways. What are your hopes for transforming terrain moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't think of it as my thing. I just had a lot of the privilege and intuition to, like we've been talking about, to make it happen. I tend to be a starter of things and a finisher. You know, I finish what I start, but, as soon as it becomes, like possible to pass it on to the community and take myself away from the leadership, action or like role, I do that just always in every space. So that's what I'm trying to do with transforming terrain. I've just been trying to like actualize the knowledge I've been learning from these indigenous elders and communities I've been listening to and learning from and the trees and stuff, but definitely not my thing. I just didn't see where else I could do it. So I created the space for myself, but yeah, I think in probably the next 2 to 5 years, I'm hoping that it's a community initiative that spans across this region. And you know, we're doing all levels of land stewardship, farming, urban, you know, stewardship, education. Yeah, you know, maybe it's not even my thing at all. Maybe I'm just a participant of it in a few, you know, in a decade or something. So, yeah. And yeah, I think, like I said in the beginning, everybody should be a land steward. That's what it's going to take, you know, to change the direction of the world's going right now, is everybody has to be a land steward. It has to be cultural, not like a role or not like a job or something like that. So as many people as we can get on board, you know.
How has it been building up the team and like bringing more people in an official capacity?
Oh, they're great. It's been hard. That's just business. But they're definitely my better half. So, you know, I'm a better person because of them. Like, I wake up a better person, more, you know, motivated to live a healthier life and take a deeper look at my boundaries and my, codependency issues and this and that. And just, so they just really pushed me to be a better person. Everything's better when it's done by the community. Even if your great idea has to be compromised or forgotten, what comes out in the end seems to be longer lasting when it's made by a community. So, it wasn't a community until they all joined. So it feels a lot better now, for sure.
On a personal level, outside of the business, what are you hoping to dive deeper into over the next few years?
I want to work with large-scale food systems that are, built upon native foods of the region. So kind of working on groundwater recharge and bioremediation projects to large scale, like millions of acres. And trying to create an actual market, like from farm to store, even if the whole world collapses, who knows? But like whether it's through capitalism or through, the opposite, where everything just collapses and we don't even have any kind of market connection, I still think I'd be doing the same thing, focusing on for the next 3 to 20 years, is making that connection at scale, feeding large populations with native foods. So, and then working with, disenfranchised communities and making land stewardship not a fodder role, a cannon fodder role, but actually like a respected and dignified thing that people do. And eventually, I think it's something everybody should do. It should be the basis of culture. And that's how indigenous people live around the world. But until then, it's going to be a trade. It's going to be a job. And that job should be respected and looked highly upon. So, figuring out how to change that too.
Thinking about what you said around when it comes to transforming terrain, maybe you're not the facilitator or the guide or the spearhead of this entity moving forward. I think that is connecting with one of the cards that we have coming up here for the future, which is the Mother of Feathers.
Aww.
We have a little pheasant.
Cute.
And so the mothers in this deck are the queens. So the queens in this deck are the mothers. And feathers, again, is like what came up with the Ace of Feathers here with inspiration. It's connected to the element of fire. So the wands, if we're working with a traditional tarot deck, this would be the Queen of Wands. It's the Mother of Feathers here in the Brady Tarot. I guess I should mention at the end of this interview that the deck I'm working with is called the Brady Tarot. And there's so much here of this idea when we think of the role of like the mother in general, of like building the creation, literally physically building the creation, bringing it into the world, and then going, okay, here, world, it's yours now. And like at some point having to hands off, and at some point having to be like, now it's just a creation growing up and I brought it in here, but I'm not, I don't have mastery or dominion over it for the rest of its existence and life. I think that's really interesting thinking about that archetype of the mother, and then with it being feathers and relating back to that Ace of Feathers, the Ace of Wands that came up first, of like, this is such a creative force. And when I think about wands as an archetype, I've used that word so many times today, but the archetype of wands, it's one of the examples that I always give is it's the force that causes flowers to bloom. Like it's the force that results in life being had and being made. And so the work of transforming terrain is so life affirming Whereas, you know, so much of our culture right now is like death affirming or like antagonistic to life. So thinking about how like you've really built, created, and unleashed into the world this very life affirming entity, and now we all get to enjoy whatever it's going to continue as and become as it grows and continues to thrive and evolve.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. You know, our team is like all queer and predominantly like femme. And yeah, I think we're in a time where we're going to be redefining gender roles. You know, I really do think that different religions and gender roles kind of arise for a society based on the needs of that society at that time. And then they get out of date and like the needs change, just like our needs change, just like nature's needs change. So I find myself feeling like I relate more to the mother than the father. I definitely am in my masculinity, and I'm cool with any pronouns, and but I tend to use they, them pronouns just because I think that we're in that redefining period right now, and we need to start thinking critically, like, yeah, about these different roles, because I think everybody needs to be a little bit of both right now. A little bit of that motherly, fatherly, androgyny kind of energy and spirit. So
yeah, I can get behind that. And who doesn't want a queer, predominantly femme landscaping team working on their yard?
It's badass.
My God.
It's dope.
That's like, that's what we've been missing in this world. And thank God, thank the cosmos, thank the universe that you've brought that into the world.
It's definitely a bet. It's good. It's good.
It's good. It's good. It's very good. We're here for it. We're here for it. Is any kind of like, I've wondered this personally, like, is there any kind of like pun in the name Transforming Terrain?
Yeah, totally. Our website colors were the trans flag. We're changing that now. We're dropping a new website, but yeah, that's where the name came from, was trans, like transgender, but transforming. And then terrain is like to rain. So
ooh.
So we're like transforming the landscape terrain more, because by increasing the evapotranspiration and keeping the water more, we increase the rain cycles. So it's kind of this like many layered pun where it's like we're literally transforming the landscape of this trade by queerifying it and like making it queer, making it indigenized and decolonized. But then we're also literally transforming terrain. Yeah.
I had only gotten the one pun. I got the trans pun and that was it. But there's so much more there. So deep. And that has now like answered the questions I have in my mind about how this last card fits in of this final card that we have for our spread here. We have the moon.
Ooh, love the moon.
And the moon, I love this card. I love this card in this deck specifically. The moon is about the deep waters. The moon, like the metaphor of the moon is about like the deepest parts of our psyche, and in tarot, like our psyche and water is like intimately connected. It's the same like metaphor. But when we think about like recharging the groundwater and like assisting, benefiting, supporting the water systems, like I can't help but think that a very literal definition of the moon is like the deep waters of the earth and the groundwater. So there's more to come with that for transforming terrain in the future in a really beautifully aligned way, even when it's like uncomfortable, because it's this way of being that is inherently at odds with the current system, which is another thing that the moon indicates. It indicates being in a landscape that is at odds or just deeply uncomfortable. One of the symbols that's always on this card is like some kind of crawfish, lobster, crustacean coming out of the water. So it's out of this space where it knows the rules, it knows what's up, it's comfortable there. It's in this like uncomfortable space. So, you know, y'all are here working to heal our deep waters, even when it's uncomfortable and difficult because of the way the world is set up right now.
Yeah, I like that. That was a cool interpretation. Yeah, or understanding of it. Definitely.
How fun. How fun.
Our waters, well, our rain comes from the ocean.
Yeah.
Our monsoon
rain.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
And then it comes back down or pours down upon us. I'm like
hoping. I'm praying for it right now.
I'm looking out
these clouds myself. I'm like, come on now. You got this.
Looking out the windows. We're like, okay. We were supposed to do you know, a little side note. This is the third time we've sat down to do this interview. First time
right?
was just like tech difficulties up the ass. They wouldn't stop. Second time it was it was raining that day, and I was like, I don't know if Jonah's gonna make it.
Yeah,
I know what it's like.
Yeah, I was like, my flood's out. My house is flooded. There's a tree in my ceiling.
Flooding. Clients need help. And in my mind, I was like, he's just enjoying the rain.
Yeah, I'm not playing, putzing around in it. That's what I want to be doing.
That's what my boyfriend's always doing when it rains. Like, we'll start trying to make plans for the week. And he's like, I don't know, there's rain in the schedule. I don't know if we'll be able to go to this on this day because I might need to be in the rain or like checking the rain barrels every 20 minutes.
I love it.
And that's just how we live here in the desert. Is rain is so incredibly sacred. It's a good opportunity for us to like stop, slow down, smell the creosote, and just live for a hot second or a cooler second.
And I'm a rain baby too myself, so it's special. The monsoon hours.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I was born right during the monsoon start. I always
Cancer
got
baby.
Rain near on my birthday.
That's beautiful. So, Jonah, if folks want to learn more about your work, learn more about the workshops, the classes, or learn more about how to bring your hot queer femme group of professionals to their yard to make things better, how can they find y'all?
You can go to our website, which is about to be completely overhauled in like 2 weeks.
So
we'll be dropping the new website in 2 to 3 weeks. But that's transformingterrain.com. And then we've got our website or our social media, which is same thing, Transforming Terrain. And we'll do a lot of funny stuff, comedic stuff on there. I don't run any of this that I'm talking about. I just show up. and then also you can email or text us at admin@transformingterrain.com or the business email, which is 520-474-5172. Got our project board back there. I'm still remembering it. It used to be my phone number, but now it's not.
How professional.
So it's better this way.
Yes.
So,
nice.
So that's how people can get in touch. Or also, probably in the near future, we're going to open up our spot over at 3702 East Kleindale Road and kind of open it up as like a demonstration site, nursery, community learning space. So.
Say?
No, that'll probably
how exciting.
Be, yeah, that's not going to be for like probably 6 months to a year. But it'll have like a bulletin board, compost toilet, outdoor shower, you know, spaces to hang and learn, books, libraries. So
awesome.
Well,
cool. I'll have all of that information down in the show notes, the website, the social media, the phone numbers, the emails. And I just really encourage, you know, folks who are listening to keep an eye on this work because it's really, really deeply needed. It's growing and expanding all of the time. And you know, as Jonah, you've said, you know, you just want to be like a steward. And if you're listening to this and you also want to be a good land steward, learning from others is key, and Jonah and their crew is an incredible resource for this kind of information and to start your own journey.
Heck yeah.
Awesome.
And same with you and your little spot over there, little cactus nursery haven.
Yes. I don't think I've talked about it much on the pod, but my boyfriend's a cactus guy, plant nerd. We're working on stewarding our own land. We have our garden growing. I've been enjoying, I've been learning from Tulsi lately, from Holy Basil. That's been my little friend, and sorghum and amaranth. Those are all big in my mind right now. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
All right. Well, thank you everyone who joined us for this conversation. Again, please check out Jonah and Transforming Terrain. And as always, happy shuffling.
Happy shuffling.